Welcome to the Missing Maura Murray podcast. This is a very special episode for us today. Lance and I are joined by the stars of the new television show, The Disappearance of Maura Murray, Maggie Freeling and Art Roderick.
Hi, guys.
How's it going?
How you doing?
Good. Thanks for joining us. We're in Maggie's stomping ground here. We're in Manhattan, downtown Manhattan, and at the NBC studios, which is super cool.
We're in uptown Manhattan, and my stomping ground is Queens.
It's
okay.
Those of us from New England understand that.
Yeah, all right.
He obviously is from Boston. He knows nothing.
Yeah. Let me start that over. No, we'll go with that. I'm happy to make the mistake and be corrected. We are in uptown Manhattan.
We're all friends here.
And it's Maggie, a big city.
Maggie came from Queens to join us. So thank you, everybody. We're gonna ask some questions about the show, but we're not gonna get too deep into the details because there's a lot of stuff that's come out.
Well, yes, that and this episode is going to air as soon, on Friday. So before the premiere of this brand new television show on the Oxygen Network, it is premiering September 23rd at 8:15 p.m. Eastern and Pacific, right after the finale of The Disappearance of Natalie Holloway. So very exciting to talk to you guys here today, but also very exciting that this show is happening finally.
Finally. We've been working on this for like a year and a half almost. We've been filming for a year.
And you guys, this is...
It has taken forever.
Right. And I had another question, but when you just said it has taken forever, was this something that was unexpected to you? Did you think that it was going to be, you know, I'll get in there, I'll look at some of the details, I'll talk to some people, and the conclusion was going to be pretty obvious? Or are you surprised right now?
A little of both. I mean, I knew this was going to take us a while to film this because I've done a couple of these shows in the past, and it does take a long time. I mean, we're talking a six-hour special, so that's a lot of filming. And we had, I mean, really a lot of people to talk to on this case. I mean, there's so many rabbit holes here that the list of people that we talked to is pretty lengthy. Not only law enforcement, but friends, family, and a lot of people involved in this thing, witnesses, people in the community, people back in Hansom, Massachusetts. So it was a pretty intense number of months that we ended up filming this thing.
As far as the amount of rabbit holes, is that something unique to this case?
So I think in some ways, yes. And I think that as somebody who has followed true crime for a while, you know, I find with other cases, you know, you'll find a body or you know where that person was going. And with Maura, it's a mystery and a mystery, as you guys have said. I mean, she vanished. And we don't know what she was doing. So that leaves the doors open for so much speculation and so many rabbit holes. We don't have much concrete evidence to steer us in one direction. So, I mean, it is pretty endless with the rabbit holes you can go down.
And you went down a lot of these rabbit holes.
We did. We did. Yeah. We did go through pretty much all of the major theories that are out there. You know, ones that you guys have talked about, you know, suicide, dying of the elements, police conspiracy, running away, and being abducted.
And do you guys feel like you've made progress on these theories?
Yeah, I do. I think, you know, as we explored each one, we did find new evidence with many of them, and we shut the door on a lot of them, too.
This is huge with people in the community, not only the people that contribute to the blogs and to the Reddit threads and et cetera. This is huge to the investigators that have looked into the case in the beginning. Have you been in contact with any of the investigators from the beginning? And what sort of information have you gotten from previous investigations that you're able to either confirm or not confirm?
Yeah, I think one of the problems with this particular case, and I mean, I did something similar to this in the 80s when America's Most Wanted first came up. And, you know, we get a couple hundred leads a night. With this particular case just hanging out there on the Internet, I mean, there's been thousands of leads in this case. It's like overwhelming, and you have to investigate every one of them. And I think one of the problems that we found is that over the years, a lot of false information has been taken as truth. And one of the main things we tried to do here is go back to February 9th of 2004 and see just exactly what the base facts were. What was Maura doing around that time? And what exactly witnesses had said, and then start from there and build out.
Right, right. And in terms of, you know, answering your question as well as working with police, you know, we have been in touch with them, and people will see that in the show.
Now, is that, so you guys developed a working relationship with law enforcement in New Hampshire. So how did that go?
Yeah, it was hard. Art did a lot of that legwork, and I think if it wasn't for Art, there's no way. I mean, you guys saw it. I mean, they have an open case. They are not divulging information, rightly so. I mean, they have to protect evidence if there does come a trial. Yeah, so we got really fortunate that Art was with us.
I think one of the issues we ran into, and you always run into, is you have two real aspects of this. You have the investigation that the police are doing, but then you also have the prosecution that the state attorney general's office would do. So, you know, they always work together, but there's a different point of view that each one has as they move through a case like this. The AG's office is trying to protect information because they have to present it as evidence at a trial. And the law enforcement side, the investigators are just trying to figure out exactly what happened to her, but also preserve evidence. So it's hard for them to talk about any portion of this case at all, because they really are looking at this case from an aspect of it being a criminal case as opposed to just a missing person case.
Right, and I think you know, there was a little bit of a push and pull with that. I mean, I think that the police and the investigators would be more open to releasing information because I think they think that could lead to new leads or somebody remembering something. But, you know, then you get the pushback from the AG's office, who are like, no, we need to preserve this evidence. So it is very, very hard.
And did you find that you had any difficulty approaching law enforcement because of all of the activity that has come up to this point with like citizen detectives and armchair detectives possibly burning bridges?
I think some of it, yes, but I think when we sat down with them and they looked us in the eye and we basically told them, hey, you know, we're just trying to get to the truth. They're trying to get to the same thing. And I think they saw that what we were doing was trying to, you know, our paths were going to intersect here. It took a little while for them to be comfortable with us and to realize that we were really serious about this and that, you know, the production really was a major film production going on here. You know, at any given point, we had three cameras. You know, we had 12 or 15 people walking around. I mean, you saw some of the crew and how large it was. So, I mean, that impressed upon them that we were really serious about getting down to the base facts of this and sorting through all the false information that's out there, that's been on the net, that's been publicized in magazines and in books. So I think they saw this as a real opportunity to help them out.
Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of the theories, there's major theories. The major theories are Maura was abducted, Maura committed suicide, whether that be she intended to when she left UMass or whether that be she got into an accident and then ran off into the woods. And that's sort of almost like a fourth theory in that way. Or she ran away. I guess the police conspiracy idea is one that I want to touch on here, because the people who believe in the police conspiracy as the truth of what happened here, I just hope they don't look at this TV show and they say, well, you know, Art and Maggie and Lance and Tim and everyone involved in the show now is compromised by this cover up and conspiracy. So I guess my question is, do you feel that you dug deep enough into the possibility of this police conspiracy to where you have a good solid opinion?
I think we have, and I think we've answered that question, Maggie. And I obviously I don't want to give up any spoilers, but it took us a long time to get there. Let me tell you that.
Yeah.
It wasn't easy. And we did talk to a lot of people. And you'll see how we came to the conclusion that we came to in the show. But I think we've answered a lot of those questions. One thing, I mean, at this point in time, if, you know, if the police had something definite, I mean, they just don't have that golden nugget out there. I mean, they have done really a lot of work on this case that is unknown to the public, mm-hmm. unknown to anybody. I mean, they've kept us fairly quiet, but they have done a lot of work. With anyone that has had any connection to her whatsoever, they have talked to. They have just about talked to.
And in terms of, you know, the police conspiracy or any kind of conspiracy or any of the theories that are out there, people are still going to believe what they want to believe. I mean, right. No matter what we find, they weren't in the room with us talking to these people, seeing their, you know, visceral reactions firsthand. I mean, if someone wants to believe in a police conspiracy, it doesn't matter what we find. They're still going to believe that. I mean, you have to be really open to the evidence to come to, you know, a rational conclusion at the end of it.
Now, you and Art, were you intimidated?
Oh,
no, my question was for Art.
No.
I'll tell you, I think Maggie has done a fantastic job in a lot of these interviews. And I think we play off each other very, very well. I have three daughters, and all three of my daughters are older than Maggie. But I think it's worked out very, very well because of our different attitudes that we bring to this case. Obviously, you know, I've got 40 years of law enforcement behind me now, and Maggie being an investigative reporter, we each have different connections to this case. Maggie went to UMass, as Maura did. You know, I'm from Cape Cod. Fred Murray, Maura's father, actually works in the town, in the hospital in the town where I have a house, and I'm always up there quite a bit. So I've actually bumped into Fred a couple times walking down the street in downtown Falmouth. So there's a lot of different connections that we both have to this particular case, which also it's been weird a couple times when we find these connections that we have. I think with her background, with the law enforcement side, and I was actually a police officer up in Massachusetts for a little while, way back when. I think that's all helped.
Yeah, and you know what I think it is too, Art, is that, you know, we both felt very strongly about this case, and I think yes. that it wasn't like we're at odds with each other. It's not like we're working against each other. Like, we both wanted to work on this.
I'm kind of jealous of your guys' relationship.
I mean, your partner is horrible.
Yeah, I mean, he's really awful to me and really mean behind the scenes to me. But you guys have like, and I think I told you guys this while we were shooting that you guys kind of have like a like an uncle and niece like kind of fun relationship. But I've actually also described Art as a person as like the cool uncle
yes.
at like a holiday party that you know, you're hanging out with.
He's the
with
cool
family.
Grandpa. I mean, he's got the photos hey, of his grandkids.
I didn't want to go there, Maggie.
Listen, he's a grandpa. It's not insulting. I mean, his grandkids are adorable. He spends his time at their hockey games and stuff.
Right, well, Lance is so much older than me that he said Art was a cool uncle, and I actually said he was a cool grandpa like Maggie did.
We know we can't get into specifics due to the case being open and legal reasons, but in the broadest sense of the, you know, term here, can you let us know, did you enter the case thinking one thing about what happened to Maura? And was that particular train of thought changed by the time you were done? And this can be Maggie can answer and then Art can answer right after.
Yeah, I think, as you guys know, you know, almost every time you speak with somebody, your opinion changes. It's wild. I mean, everybody is so passionate and compelling when you talk to them that, you know, when you go in with an open mind, your mind is so impressionable. So, Yeah, I think at least for myself, you know, my opinion changed pretty much the whole time. And then we got to the end and we're just like, okay, but what is the most rational thing that could have happened? What is the most likely? And we agreed. I think the whole time we agreed on things. You know, there was some like back and forth. Well, like, could this have happened? And then one of us would be like, no way. And the other one's like, yeah, but look at it like this. And we really did have those discussions. And we were mostly on the same page. But yeah.
Yeah, I absolutely. You do go back and forth a lot. I mean, there's only like, you know, you mentioned the theories before, and I mean, really, those are the basis of what you have to work with. There's really not many options outside of those five or six theories, other than variations of some of them. But we went back and forth on a lot of them, and I think all of them are probabilities, but I think we came to the conclusion that the most probable one would be X as opposed to some of these other ones. And I don't want to give away what our theory is, but I think, you know, we had to look at, of those five or six theories, which one is more probable that happened here.
So you said X, is that some kind of code like that we can decipher online somehow?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No, don't.
Yes. Everybody try and decipher.
A conspiracy theory on X.
Right.
We got five episodes ready to go.
X on equals X. What? Yeah.
Right. And that's partially a joke, but that's partially because you know, right? There's a lot of noise in the case, and you guys had to go in there and you had to eliminate all of this noise. And you know that's part of it. You can say something as innocent as, we had X as a theory, and people are going to start Googling like more Murray names that begin with X.
Yes.
Because you might have something that, you know, and you're delivering some code.
Yes.
So what was it like trying to fight through all that noise?
Yeah. I mean, I think Art was much more frustrated by it than myself, because I kind of grew up in this age of, you know, that's just what life is like. But I think Art was very frustrated by it.
Maggie's right. I mean, to me, it and I look at it from the law enforcement lens, and you spend a lot of time tearing down these theories or these hypotheses or whatever you want to call them, and that's basically what we did, and I think that was a big help to law enforcement too. They looked at a lot of the conclusions we came to, and they tend to agree with sort of what we've come up with. But again, it just shows you how bizarre this case is. I mean, you guys have talked about it, and you know, we've looked at a ton of information that you've provided. And to me, it's just unbelievable that she goes missing in a 7 to 10 minute time frame. Completely. And, you know, that's frustrating in and of itself.
You know, I think a really good example of Art and I actually really disagreeing on this is with, you know, we went out, we followed him and his armchair people, and, you know, everybody's saying, you know, we should follow this because this is a great example of all the noise in this case. And to me, it was just, he's not hurting anybody. You know, what does it matter? If he comes across something, that's great. That can add to it. You know, he's having people go out there and search. I mean, what is the harm in that? And I think Art and I did clash on that a little bit, because Art was like, yeah, but he's clouding the investigation. You know, he's bringing up all these things, you know, talking to Fred and making Fred have hope. And, you know, I get that, but I'm like, but he's still out there. You know, the more hands on deck, I think sometimes it can help. And there is this fine line. And I think we're still trying to figure out where that line is.
It is providing false hope to Mr. Murray or the Murray family. Is it cruel, or is it actually like well-intentioned and maybe nice? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you guys were talking about, and I didn't even expect to talk about this, but it's a fascinating concept when you were talking about like the cool uncle or the cool grandfather, and then you come into the scene and you're from a completely different generation. I feel like Tim and I are kind of bridge that, the two generations a bit. But that's not just generations of how people consume information. That's generations of how investigations are happening. Mm-hmm. You know, Art's frustrated because you're thinking that, hey, the more people talking, you know, some things might you know, some people might be like hurt feelings, or some things might be, you know, not necessarily true, but at least the conversation's still going, and at least people are still sourcing all this information. Sure. And I can imagine an old style way of investigating isn't like that at all. You want to keep things as close to the vest as possible, and you want to make sure that you don't release information for the sake of the case.
And the police had said to us,
but there is a balance there, right?
Right. And the police had said to us too that they read the blogs. I mean, they do go through all of this, and it's daunting. I mean, you guys know, you guys read them. I don't know if you do anymore, but there's a point where for your sanity, you just have to stop. But I mean, they do. And, you know, they go through all of that.
I can't even handle it just based on the information from our point of view. I couldn't imagine doing it from an investigator's point of view, trying to find something in there. If you're trying to, like, troll the case, you're putting, like, all this crappy information out there. You're putting, you know, and I can't imagine being law enforcement looking at that and saying, like, okay, well, I know this is bullshit, but I got
to
follow up on it.
Follow up on it.
I got to look into it somehow, because what if it isn't? What if that's 0.01% that's not the case?
And it sits out there, and then all of a sudden the public believes it's fact.
Right.
And it really isn't fact.
Yeah. Right. All they've done is just planted the seed and, you know, watch the community, like, nurture it, and then it grows.
So it really kind of opens this can of worms for law enforcement, that they have to follow up on this, even though they don't believe that it could be a possibility.
Right.
And how
we ended up, and I'm not going to give it away, but we ended up actually following a couple leads ourselves that came our way. That we actually mentioned to the state police, and boom, they were all over it the next day. But I think we do show that there's a lot of misinformation out there. And a lot of times that's very difficult to have to go through all that misinformation. I mean, it's good that it keeps the case in the public's eye, but it kind of keeps this false information and falsehoods going, for as long as the internet stays up, I guess.
So it has to be just one last point on this whole thing. Would you think that it's somewhat refreshing, or maybe they don't necessarily come out and say it, but do you think that there's some point, some part of law enforcement that is grateful for something like this because they have people who are volunteering to do something like this, and they don't really have to focus on it so much? Like you just said, you brought some stuff up to the state police, and the next day they were out looking at it. That was something that they probably wouldn't have bothered to follow up on just due to resources and time.
I think we would both agree yes.
Yes.
Right. As long as it's being done in a responsible way.
Yeah,
exactly. And I think that's the hard part. You know, you have to develop trust with the law enforcement agency, because there are a lot of people that would do something like this, but not in a responsible way. And I think they had to feel us out and make sure that that's exactly what we were trying to do. We weren't trying to take advantage of the Murray family or put false information out there. We reiterated to them over and over again that we just wanted to get down to the bare facts of what happened on February 9th of 2004.
So now, other than Lance and myself, who were you most intimidated by when you spoke with them?
Well, I don't know if there's many interviews we can really talk about right now, but I would say nobody knew what to expect going into the Renner interview.
Okay, so the answer is me and Lance. I just want to write this down.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. I'm just going to write that down. Former U.S. Marshal and investigative journalist thought that we were really intimidated. Let me just write that down.
We came in hot.
Actually,
okay.
I look like a freaking nerd meeting you guys. Like that trailer that's like out online right now, like my face is red. I'm like, oh my God, you guys, tell me how you met. Tell me everything. Like I was like way too excited.
Well, I couldn't see your face through all the cat hair flying up out of my couch.
Yes, and your cat was screaming. Yes. But nobody knew what to expect with the Renner interview. It was that could have gone many ways.
And how do you guys feel that went?
You know, I personally do like James Renner. You know, and everybody has their opinions on his book. I personally really like him. He's been really great to me. He has been so helpful. When you ask for information, he will give it to you. I think he truly does want to find out what happened. He believes that she is not, does not want to be found. So, you know, he's putting an end to that. I think Art felt differently, but it was,
I'm sure he's a nice guy. I just don't, from purely, an investigative standpoint, I think he drew a lot of conclusions based on false information or the fact that nobody would talk to him. And he kind of dragged those conclusions out to these very grandiose type theories. But, I mean, he's a guy trying to write a book and make some money. I just don't agree with the stuff that he concluded in his book based on, I mean, there wasn't a lot of people that talked to him. I can tell you that. He, you know, you ask him, did you talk to so-and-so? He'll tell you yes. But the follow-up question is, well, did they tell you anything or just tell you they didn't want to talk to you? A lot of people didn't talk to him. I can tell you the family didn't want to talk to him. So, you know, he draws a lot of conclusions, I think, based on incorrect information.
Yeah, so it was interesting meeting him because, you know, we had all read the book. We had heard him on your podcast, and I was definitely nervous to meet him. I didn't know if he was going to be as forthcoming, as helpful. I mean, you read this book and you come away with this villain character. You know, he doesn't speak highly of himself in the book. So, I mean, you come away with this type of villain, and then you meet him, and he's actually, as you guys know, he's very nice. He is a nice guy.
Yeah, he's a pretty mellow guy.
He's a very mellow guy. So
I think, I agree with you, Maggie. I think the book was more about himself, his, you know, true crime addict.
Yes, but he does label it as such. It's my obsession with the Maura Murray case. I mean, yes, it's about him. And then, you know, yes, he did do some things very improperly. But, you know, then the bottom line is this book, one, Renner found out the stuff about West Point and, you know, the credit card fraud. Without Renner, we wouldn't have that. And that rejuvenated people's interest in this case. So, you know, yes, he did some harm, but was it for the greater good?
Yeah. I mean, he did come up with good facts, reports. You know, some people did talk to him, and he was able to come up with some good information to keep the case alive. It's just some of the conclusions he drew, I think were a little far-fetched.
So if you were to have any advice for someone who was going into something like this, like either writing a book or doing a podcast or just armchair sleuthing on a case, what would you tell people?
Everything needs to be corroborated by multiple sources and keep your notes and your records, preferably audio recordings.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, Maggie and I had these conversations several times regarding eyewitness accounts. And I said, God, I hate eyewitness accounts. There's a lot of people in jail, wrongly in jail, just based on eyewitness accounts without corroboration of what they've actually seen. And that's really what we did a lot. And you'll see this through the six episodes is we were able to corroborate a lot of information that was out there through not just an eyewitness testimony, but through actual factual type sources. So that was one of the big things that we did during these episodes was to corroborate a lot of information.
And hearing the two of you talk, Maggie gives the answer, you back it up. That answer right there, and it's so clear that you guys had this, you know, this is a conversation that's been that happened early and often with this case is how do we do this right? How do we make sure that this is done right? And you realize that there's going to be an impact when people watch the show and they think they can do the same thing. So you're now saying, hey, here's what you have to do. Was there at any time that you felt like you guys bit off more than you can chew? Did you ever when you're sitting you're sitting together in the car and you're talking about this and you're talking about the responsible way to do stuff, were you ever like, holy shit, I don't know if we can do this?
Yeah, I mean, I think especially for the time frame, we certainly bit off more than we can chew. I mean, we're talking about, you know, this isn't an ongoing podcast series like you guys are fortunate to have. I mean, we were like, here's your air date, get it all in by this time. So I mean, it is insane, as you guys know, how much information. You guys were with us on part of this. I mean, yes, we definitely bit off more than we could chew going into this with only a year and a half working on it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember when we first started, we're like, oh, my God, do we have enough for 6 one-hour shows? And then it came to the point where we had to start cutting stuff out. Because there was so many twists and turns
big
in this
stuff,
thing.
Like
so many
stuff that I think people even see in the trailer that didn't make it into the show, which will probably be web extras. But, I mean, there's big stuff. There's interviews that we did, evidence that we've gotten that, you know, couldn't even make it into the show.
Okay, so how excited are we going to be, and how excited are the listeners of this podcast going to be about this show and the new information?
So excited. I mean, if you're listeners, people who are following this case and have listened to every episode that you guys have done, man, they're, really, really happy with what we found.
Yeah, there's a definite flow to this show. I mean, we kind of, in the beginning, bring up all the questions, and then we try to go through and then answer all the questions.
Yeah, I mean,
so
definitely.
It's kind of like a roller coaster.
Stick with it, and you will find a lot.
Yeah, that's pretty much the story with the case itself, is nothing really gets going until you really start
digging.
Until
you get into it.
Yeah. Right. So you got to kind of show them that too.
Yes. Yeah. Let yourself become obsessed and then just let it wash over you and just listen to the information and then make up your opinion. You know, come to your opinion on this series after you've watched all six episodes.
Yes.
And this is, I have two questions and you can each answer them, you know,
In unison, as we usually do.
But now, I know that this first question seems obvious on the face of it, but was this show the right thing to do?
Okay, I can answer first because I feel like we might have different opinions. Yes, I do think so. And I think this show was important to do, one, because I think this is solvable. And there needs to be more attention on it. And somebody needs to say something, finally. And, you know, as we've seen from other documentaries and podcasts, you know, when there is a lot of public attention, people will crack. So I think, yes, number one. Number two, Maura's case is representative of a national problem when a person goes missing. Or when you find a body, a Jane or John Doe, there is no, you know, national methodology for identifying and finding missing persons. And this is something Art and I came across. You know, the system is very broken. It's very disjointed. So it's really difficult when you have a young girl and the cops respond to this scene and it just seems like a drunk driving accident. It's not considered a crime scene. It's not considered a crime. So, you know, the problem starts right there. And the problems just keep on going when, you know, this person could have been abducted, killed, and their body could have been left in Idaho. And the way of identifying that Jane Doe to a missing person in New Hampshire is very, very difficult. You know, so at any given day, there are 70,000 missing women in this country, and Maura is representative of that.
That is a huge issue. I mean, if there's no foul play that can be determined for a person going missing, then it falls into this kind of this gray area. If there's foul play, then obviously it becomes a criminal case. If there's no foul play, then they're kind of just listed in one of five different databases. You know, we could do a whole show on just the whole missing person thing. And that's one of the things that both Maggie and I were kind of upset about, because we actually wanted to spend a day here in DC and kind of talk to all these different organizations that have databases sort of touching on missing persons cases. We didn't get a chance to do that. Maybe if we do this again, we will. I mean, I think it's interesting, but it also would educate the public.
It's crucial. Like, people, you know, watch these shows, you know, CSI, whatever.
Right.
And they think, you know, you find a body, you plug in the DNA, and poop, there's your match right there. It absolutely 100% does not work like that.
Yeah.
So Maura could be a Jane Doe in a morgue somewhere. She doesn't have to be buried in the White Mountains. I mean, she could be found and not found. And this was something that Art and I both feel very passionately about. We didn't have time in the series to get this in as we really wanted to, but, you know,
so you feel passionate about this as an issue, not necessarily that this is the outcome.
Yes, this as an issue we feel very passionately about. So to answer your question, yes, I think this show, you know, should have been made because it's largely representative of a bigger problem.
Sure.
Yep. That's great.
And you agree with that, Art?
No, absolutely. I mean, I think that is the kind of the view from 35,000 feet. Yes, it illustrates a larger problem, and I wish we could have got into that a lot more. But I mean, for this particular case, I think the fact that we're able to get to the basic facts of this and hopefully dispel a lot of stuff out there. You know, we're talking 13 years later, a lot of things change in 13 years. You know, sometimes witnesses come forward that wouldn't have come forward 13 years ago. And I'm hoping that's the particular case here. And I know the New Hampshire State Police also hope the same thing, that somebody's mind might have changed. They might have moved away. They could have had some information that they didn't bring forward, thinking that the police would have figured it out by now. And this just kind of brings it to the forefront again. But I think at some point we really should specifically talk about the missing person issue here in the United States, because you can legally go missing at 21 years old or older.
Well, yeah, I think that was a huge part of her case. I mean,
right.
You know, that was the thing. She was 21 years old. Like, she could have run away if she wanted to. There's no law that says you can't just disappear yourself. So that whole concept was very problematic with her case.
I just have one quick question, then we can wrap this up. So there's an Applebee's in Littleton, New Hampshire, right?
There is.
Yeah. Can you just tell us a little bit about this Applebee's? How familiar are you with it?
Well, I can tell you our DP has an Applebee's shirt. Our sound guy was very kind, and one of the women was out for surgery, and, you know, he gave her a card. And, you know, we have a very close relationship with the people at Applebee's in Littleton. If anybody's listening or watching the show, which I'm sure they will be, hello, yes. You guys. Thank you for feeding us and keeping us happy with the booze the whole time.
Yes. Yeah, it was just one of those things where we're talking Littleton and there's not much there from a perspective of, plus, you know, we work late. I mean, and when you get back at, you know, 9:30 at night, you're tired, and it's Applebee's just happened to be at the bottom of the hill where the hotel was. And
isn't their slogan like your neighborhood grill or something? Like, it straight up was like, we would all be like done with a long day of filming, and we're like, man, see you at Applebee's in a bit. And then like one of the producers would be at the bar with their laptop, and then the whole squad would walk in, and we were like, oh, hey, like everybody was at Applebee's. It was the spot in Littleton. Yeah.
Well, the show is going to be amazing. The work that you guys put in on it is, for the past year and a half, is phenomenal. And I think when people see this, if it doesn't clear up some issues for them, it'll certainly open their eyes to the approach.
Or it'll certainly add issues that they hadn't thought about before.
Or it'll add issues.
No, just kidding.
Yeah.
Well, and there is something else that I want to say is that, you know, without you guys and your podcast, we would not be here. So thank you for doing that. And, you know, I know you guys feel like a little shamey about some of the first episodes you put out, but everything is a learning curve. And I'm sure Art and I are going to find some of that with this too. You know,
yes.
If there's something that, you know, we stumble on, please forgive us. We are doing our best, and we all have the best intentions. So thank you guys for your podcast.
Yeah, the podcasts have been great. I told you the story about a year ago. This was a year ago. We hadn't even started shooting. We had just started talking about the case, and I was asked to give this speech at the New Zealand Embassy here in Washington, D.C. Well, I walked in, and I started talking to one of the guys, and I go, oh, yeah, I'm getting ready to shoot this missing person case out of New Hampshire, Maura Murray. And he, you know, in this New Zealand accent, he goes, I just listened to one of the podcasts.
Do the New Zealand accent, Art.
To the latest podcast before he had walked in and met me. So the podcasts are great, and obviously they're everywhere. You got a fan, at least one fan in New Zealand that's been listening to you guys on the podcast.
You think he's got an extra room that he can like hook us up with? Because I've been dying to go.
Sure. I've got an extra room, Lance. Come to New Zealand.
That's like Irish or Scottish.
You might want to cut that accent.
Yeah. Wow, that was super
Lance,
offensive.
Please leave it in. As I'm just saying, be forgiving of us. Yeah. Like, everybody, please. Like, Tim has to ruin the whole thing.
I love the podcast, guys.
But
thank you, guys. Yeah. Seriously, so much for the work that you put in. Like, it's really meaningful for us to have gone on this journey for as long as we have, and then to meet you guys. And you really represent hope, you know, for us and a lot of the people in this community. So I know that you know that burden is on your shoulders by now. But, you know, it's going to be pretty cool to see all these people watch the show and really feel good about the work that you and everyone has put into it.
And I think we should also, the Texas Crew is a fantastic organization, and they're going to make all of us look good.
Oh my gosh.
In and of itself is a difficult mission, but they are the most fantastic humans.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Think about.
They've done a bang up show.
Think about what they've done.
Yeah.
Without totally sounding like a fanboy, but think about what they've done. They've taken the information that's out there online, that's been crowdsourced. They found the podcast. They gambled on chemistry between the four of us, and they gambled on the network, Oxygen, rebranding as a crime network, having the balls to say, okay, well, we're going to have to go through some lawyers here, but we can get this done. And now you just said it's solvable. I think this is solvable.
Yes.
And 2 years ago, if you were to ask me, it wasn't solvable.
Or if you were to ask anybody in the community, who knows what they would have said. Depending on the day, they may have given you a different answer.
Exactly. And now you're saying, no, this is solvable.
Yeah.